Thank you, John. And on ABC Radio and on your pod, you're with me, Noel Debien, and The Good Life. Well, a new census is only a couple of months off. August 2011, Australians are going to answer the census questions, and there's one optional question on there, of course, about religious affiliation. Well, the Australian Atheist Foundation is very interested in this census. In fact, it's begun a campaign to get people to pay attention to the optional question on religious affiliation. The point is that census information helps government to form public policy. Both government and the private sector look at that census data to get a better sense of how to plan and where priorities should lie. Well, on The Good Life, in this episode, we're hearing from a young Aussie atheist about why atheism helps him to lead the good life, but also why his organisation wants us all to think more carefully about the upcoming census.
Hello, my name is Jason Ball and I'm a spokesperson for the Atheist Foundation of Australia.
Jason, welcome to the program. We don't have a lot of atheists on the program, given that we specialise in religion, but of course, atheism is part of the spectrum of belief, one way or another.
Yep, indeed.
You're comfortable with that description?
Some people even go so far as to say atheism is like another religion. But for me, calling atheism a religion is like calling bald a hair colour. It just doesn't really work.
So atheism is the absence of religious faith, I presume, is a good way to define it for you?
That's right.
You're a young voice. Are you typical of the movement in Australia?
Absolutely. A recent study done by the Australian Catholic University in association with Monash University found that less than half of Generation Y believe in a God. And I think that's telling. I think that's showing that atheism is a thing of the future as opposed to the past. And I think, you know, there's various reasons for this. I think as we move forward, our scientific knowledge and understanding of the universe increases, and belief in a God, I think, is becoming less intellectually satisfying. I mean, if you look at fields of biology and physics to cosmology, we no longer need to invoke God in order to explain the complexity of the universe, the origin of the universe even.
You're, what, 23 years of age, and you're clear-mindedly an atheist. Where did that start for you?
Well, I mean, growing up in Australia, which is a relatively secular country, I was raised also in a pretty irreligious household, so I couldn't say that religion was ever forced onto me. In fact, I'd probably say, you know, that growing up, I was never even asked to consider it. I remember once asking my parents why we didn't go to church because they went to church on The Simpsons. And in response to this, my mum said, well, you know, church is on Sundays and you play football on Sundays. So what would you rather do? And the answer to that was pretty easy for me.
So no direct influence from parents about religion as such?
Well, they did inform me that there was a God and that there was a heaven and a hell. I mean, mind you, this was around the same time I was being told that there's a Santa Claus and a tooth fairy. So when I discovered that these things weren't real, it kind of did cast a doubt on my mind about these other things. But still, I kind of would talk to God as if I had my own invisible friend who was always looking out for me. And in a way, it was kind of like therapy, like whether there was someone listening or whether I was just talking to myself, it still felt good to talk through my dilemmas and things like that. I didn't really feel like I needed to know whether it was true or not. I never really investigated it. And this all changed for me when I went on student exchange when I was 17 years old.
Where were you sent off to?
Well, I almost went to Japan, and I can't imagine how different my life would be if I had gone to Japan, but the school year didn't fit in well with VCE, so I ended up spending half a semester in the USA. And I was situated in the state of Kansas, which is, you know, the heart of the Bible Belt, or the buckle of the Bible Belt. And I lived with a Catholic family.
Who would have been a minority in Kansas as well, I think.
Yeah, no doubt. I did attend a few masses, but I actually found that I enjoyed more going along to my friends at school's church, which was Evangelical Pentecostal Christians.
What was that about?
Well, I mean, I went to church twice a week, which included a Christian youth group and like a Bible study. Yeah. And, I mean, many people ask me, why didn't you just say, I'm not religious, so I'm not going to go to church? But, you know, going on exchange is all about experiencing a different culture.
Yeah.
And that was just what they did over there. So I actually found it incredibly interesting to learn about their beliefs, and certainly gave me I certainly gave them the time of day with my attention and enthusiasm to learn. And it really forced me to make up my mind about what I believed in. I think the first question I was asked by a new friend who was taking me along to youth group was, are you religious? And my response was, well, you know, I go to an Anglican school, so I guess I'm an Anglican. And her follow-up question to that was, well, have you accepted Jesus Christ as your personal Lord and Savior? And my answer to that was, I don't think so.
That's a particularly Protestant question, I think, too.
Yeah. My very first youth group I went to, the pastor, the very first thing he explained to us was that it's generally understood that the earth is about 6,000 years old.
He didn't.
And I was actually the only kid in my class of 28 who believed in evolution. And I was there in 2005, the same year intelligent design was introduced into the biology curriculum.
Yeah.
And also the same year the state of Kansas voted overwhelmingly to ban gay marriage. And sort of this gave me sort of some first-hand experience of the impact that fundamentalist religion can have when a society takes it really seriously.
Now, I can understand that that worry about fundamentalist religion, because whatever it is, whether it's, you know, Catholic fundamentalism or Muslim fundamentalism or Hindu fundamentalism, for that matter, over Ayodhya or other places, it causes terrible conflict. Those extremes aside, there's a point at which you really said to yourself, no, there really isn't a God, because that's a decision, isn't it? That's a real decision that I've come intellectually and satisfactorily to the point that there isn't one.
It was. So, I mean, basically, I had to learn how to evaluate the claims that they were making, yeah. Be it, you know, Jesus is the Son of God, the Bible is written by God, there is a God, down to the small things like being a young earth creationist or not. And I had to learn about how to think critically, to learn about what logical fallacies are, like confirmation bias. And I picked up books from the library about written by Carl Sagan, Stephen Jay Gould, and Richard Dawkins. And this
thinkers.
Is actually before Richard Dawkins had written The God Delusion.
Yep.
Because my primary interest was evolution, because I found it so fascinating that people didn't believe in it. I was pretty sure it was a scientific fact. You know, I was taught it in my high school back in Australia. And I came to the understanding that science is the best tool we have to discern the reality of the world around us, the process of examination and observation and testing and evidence. And
now, I think religious people would agree that science is the best way to evaluate those things. That's all real clear thinking and all that sort of stuff. I suppose what fascinates me is partly about what is it that isn't in you that you observed in these people in Kansas, these friends of yours. They had something which was belief, or they would call it faith, they'd call it that. What did you understand it as if there really isn't a God, in your opinion? What were they doing?
Well, I found that, you know, a lot of their beliefs came from the fact that it was all that they had known in their life. And I felt, you know, if these people were raised in the Middle East, then they would be Muslim. If they were raised in India, then they would be Hindu. And I felt that they were merely following the culture and going along with the beliefs of their culture. And so I thought, you know, all of these different beliefs that are out there that are contradicting one another, they can't all be true. And I felt like the only logical conclusion was that none of them could be true. I mean, I just certainly, from a scientific perspective, I just didn't feel like there was a transcendental world out there that existed beyond science. I just didn't see the evidence for it. And I felt like, you know, extraordinary claims like God exists probably requires extraordinary evidence to back it up.
What about your own value system? Because everybody has one, I think it's fair to say. How have you structured your own way of living your life, living a good life for you? Where do the sources and principles come from for you?
Well, I mean, for me, and I think for most of civilization and society, we do base our values and our morals on sort of a shifting moral zeitgeist that, for me, has its sort of basis in utilitarianism, in creating the least amount of harm for the most amount of happiness. And I discovered that perspective through my reading of Peter Singer, who's an academic at the University of Melbourne, which I attended.
Well known for his argument over, I think, animal rights.
Yeah, he was the founder, in fact, of, you know, animal liberation and emancipation. And he, I think, is a perfect example of how you can live a good life in a godless universe.
Now, the organisation you're involved with, the Atheist Foundation, is running a program coming up to the Australian Census on August the 9th. And that program is to get people to say no religion on the census form, not just put down Christian or Buddhist, if that's what your ancestors were or your parents were, but to put no religion. Now, what's that about?
Firstly, from the perspective of the Atheist Foundation, we think that the question that is asked in the census on religion is problematic. You know, the question reads, what is the person's religion? Which is, of course, you know, it assumes that the person answering the question does have a religion and therefore it can be seen as bias in favour of religion.
Right.
What we think the question is actually asking is, what do you believe in? And I think that the way that the census is used, it exists as if that's what the question is asking. And what we want to see is an accurate reflection of the beliefs and spirituality of Australians, because we think that there's an underlying large amount of people who are non-believers who are actually ticking Catholic or ticking Anglican, because they assume that all the question wants to know is where they are baptized or the denomination of the high school they went to, like was what in my case with Anglicanism. And when the Catholic Church says something like, according to the census, 25 Australians are Catholic, what they want people to think is that 25% of Australians actually believe in the tenets and dogmas of Catholicism, and therefore politicians and policymakers should aim public policy for those people.
So what you're arguing is that it should be a high level of commitment to a religion, not just a sort of a feeling of affiliation that's reflected on the census.
Yeah, well, I mean, in the last census, 60% of Australians ticked some form of Christianity, but only 9% of Australians say that they regularly attend church. And I think that's a pretty good indicator of how many people, you know, actually take religion quite seriously in the country. And I think you'll agree that, you know, there's a pretty big gap in the numbers there.
Is the campaign partly about the idea of state aid for education, state aid for religious organisations? Is that what's part of your concern?
Absolutely. The census information is certainly used by the government to inform public policy and funding levels for education. And it's even used by groups like the Australian Christian Lobby, who do make up quite a small percent of the population, but are having a very big say when it comes to influencing the formulation of policy. I mean, you only have to look locally here in Victoria to see the Baillieu government crumbling under the pressure of lobby groups to exempt religious organisations from anti-discrimination laws. You know, they're demanding the right to discriminate against people based on gender, sexuality and religion. And this isn't just churches we're talking about. These are public services funded with public money. I mean, there's a whole range of other social issues like euthanasia and abortion and gay marriage and education where religious lobby groups, we feel, are having a big impact across all of these areas. And they're using statistics obtained from the census in order to do so.
How many people do you think are actually atheists? Because there's a continuum from religious to agnostic, meaning I'm not convinced about anything either way, down to atheist, which is a very definite decision.
Yeah.
Like a good Marxist would say that there is no God. This is a creation of a need in the human person. What sort of numbers do you think are actually no religion? And do you include atheist and agnostic in that?
I think I do, because I think no religion and atheism, agnosticism do sort of all imply the same thing. I know that there's some people who are uncomfortable with using certain terms, like atheist and agnostic, especially because they've got various connotations associated with them.
And their families might react to it, for example, too.
Yeah, exactly. And so ticking no religion could be seen as an easy way to, rather than ticking atheist, which might seem a bit harder for people. Because it is a scary thing to acknowledge that, you know, there is no afterlife or that there is no God. And some people do like to just maybe cling on to a bit of hope or a bit of something like that. But, you know, I mean, for me personally, my life has more meaning because I know that it's the only life that I'm going to live. And I know that we have to make the most of it.
Jason Ball of the Australian Atheist Foundation, thanks for being part of The Good Life.